Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, brave Orion.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Phil, and Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join us Fridays for Break On Through or Echoes in the Darkness with Paynum, and sit in with Aphasiana and Babbler on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. These shows are designed that you can color outside the lines with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to new expression and opening avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Rana. Can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How goes it?
Chilly.
I get that, but it's, you know what? The temps are going in the right direction. We're supposed to get up to like 36 next week. So eventually spring will be here and then summer, and then I'll be complaining about,
my daffodils are already pushing through.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yep. But got a great show lined up tonight. We got Tom Waits carryovers. We got the new contest rights, inspired by a poem by Kenneth Patchen. And, of course, looking forward to hanging out with you. And who knows, maybe another cool poet or two will call in. Or we could just have some cool poets hanging out on the board. I know we got Hats. We've got Rozzy. Good to see both of them.
Hello, Hats. Hello, Rozzy. How you doing?
Yep. And I know Zach was around there somewhere, but I think he wandered off for a bit. But he was on the earlier show. But things are seeming good tonight. And I put a new light bulb in my lamp, and my room is so much brighter. It's nice.
Burnt bulbs.
And I see Rozzy is freezing outside. I don't envy her.
What you doing outside?
Well, I'm guessing she mentioned something about work. It's where she lives, it's that time of day where they head to work.
Okay.
Exactly. It's not after midnight time there. So, I already posted that poem. 7 a.m. in Finland.
Well, I get that. Yeah. And you're just a tinge colder than we are. Apologies for that.
Yeah, right. Just a wee bit. All right. Well, I guess whenever you're ready, Rex, we can go ahead and get the ball rolling.
All right.
All right. So the first poem I've put up is Friends by S. Sharp. And he was nice enough to supply us with a recording, so here we go.
Friends. I smoke my friends to the filter. Cigarettes, Marlboros, stained with nicotine and tar, pulled straight from the dirty ashtray amidst the ashes. Lipstick stained, teeth marks on their butts. Life biting their asses somewhere in a smoky corner bar downtown. Just another nasty habit, blowing smoke rings down their throats through stained teeth and a smoker's cough.
Great read, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam. What do you think?
I always enjoy Scott's readings. He's got a great performance voice. I really liked the imagery and extended metaphor in this. It was a great take on the prompt, I smoke my friends down to the butt. And, you know, I like how it's in its personification and an extended metaphor of cigarettes and speaks on the addiction of smoking and the idea of rather being alone, rather being with your cigarettes than actually with people. I also think there could be, you know, like more of a metaphor, like instead of about cigarettes, it could be actually about the way that somebody treats people. You know, like, I don't know, lipstick stained teeth marks on their butts, life biting their asses somewhere in a smoky cornered bar downtown. I like that stanza because it really makes me think about the idea of the kind of people that you would see all gathered together at that smoky corner bar, you know, all the people whose life has just, you know, totally bit them in the ass, nothing's going right, and they're just there to either drink their sorrows away or, you know, complain to who will ever listen. So great write and very well done.
Nice. I agree on the metaphor, but I'll go with it on the angle of a poison, the poison of who and what he is, stained with nicotine and tar, the sort of, especially with that next one down, straight from the dirty ashtray amidst the ashes, the idea of burning one's bridges, so to speak, in the friends that he has. They just left as ashes in the ashtray itself. Just the sort of being so poisonous and full of vitriol that his soul is stained with the nicotine and tar. And the vitriol hits on the back end with blowing smoke rings down their throats through stained teeth and a smoker's cough. The derivative quality of poison in the moment and breathing that essence on anybody and everybody that comes within one's sphere.
Absolutely. Great comment.
Oh, we've got Sapphire in the house. Hello, Sapphire.
Yeah, it's good to hear, good to see her. And I think she brought some wine for us all to enjoy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Nice. Very cool. It's always good to see her. So, absolutely. And up next we have Tell Me More by Jim Bellamy. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Tell Me More by Jim Bellamy. Beige Red Giants. You saw me sneak... Beige Red Giants. You saw me sneaking after sneaker peaks alone, without a dream in my heart, without an endless sweet spire of my own. Beige Red Giants, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for an endless sweet spire I really could care for. And then suddenly appeared before me, the only one my arms could ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, wow, whiz, cast spells. But when I looked, fat red giants had turned into a bedded soul. Oh, oh, oh. Beige red giants, now I'm no longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a bedded soul of my own. You better shape up, because I need an endless sweet spire, and instead I got a bedded soul. You better shape up. You better understand. To my heart I must be true, and this bedded soul and me are through. We go together like Shem and Sean, like Sean and Shem, remembered forever as daubed, 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 diseased, diseased, boom, da boom, da boom. Well, a well, a well, uh-huh. Tell me more, how does a female grow? Tell me more, is the bedded soul a joke? Tell me more, where is my sodden endless sweet spire? Seeking after sneaker peaks, dreams ripped at the seams, but oh, those seeking after sneaker peaks nights. End poem. All right.
Tell me more. Like, does he have a car? Well, this was a particularly clever write. I like the combination of his, oh, by the way, you did an awesome read of it. I like the clever combination of his own words combined with the two songs, at least two songs, maybe more, Without a Dream in My Heart, and the songs from, there's at least two songs from Greece, the end song with You Better Shape Up, and the beginning song with Tell Me More, Tell Me More. I love the whole kind of cutting edge bebop sound that he managed to weave together with this. Wonderful imagery and metaphors, great wordplay, really a fun and unique lyrical quality. I like how this kind of delves into, like, I think, kind of different personalities, or even the idea of that we search for what we think we need, only to realize that it's the wrong thing. And, he definitely, if nothing else, he really had fun with this. I feel like, I don't know, beige red giants kind of make me think of giant redwoods, the trees, or maybe like flames of fire. I really like, and then suddenly appeared before me, the only one my arms could ever hold. I heard someone whisper, wow, whiz, cast spells. When I looked, fat red giant had turned into a bedded soul. Oh. I feel like that speaks on the destruction of one's hopes and dreams. Great lines and very well done.
Nice. All right. I get the idea up front. Beige Red Giant just told me, seeking after sneaker peaks alone, without a dream in my heart, without an endless sweet spire of my own. The sneaker peaks alone, I'm getting the idea of one who peeks in windows, because it walks that line of hiding in the woods, so to speak, or behind the beige red giants might be the curtains on the windows itself. You've got a casual viewer, or somebody who's not a casual viewer, but sees something that he would like to have, but can't have. And the idea of walking through, but then seats without a dream in my heart, without a bedded soul of my own. The idea of got to keep doing it, because he's outside the norm of what is. He doesn't think he, then you get that, you better shape up, because I need an endless sweet spire. And instead, I got a bedded soul. You better shape up. You better understand. To my heart, I must be true. And this bedded soul and me are through. The idea of walking a different tune from that moment forth. And then we go together. But he finishes out, seeking after sneaker peak dreams ripped at the seams. But oh, those seeking after sneaker peak nights. It kind of looks on the fact that you actually you get what you pay for, so to speak, in the end. And it's not a very pleasant angle, because he does offer up that note. How does a female crow? Tell me more, is the bedded soul a joke? And then he asks, where is my son in this sweet spire? That idea of, I dipped my toes into something, and I'm still without. And why?
I like that. That's a really cool interpretation.
All right. So where do we go next?
All right. Up next, we have The Busy Low Road by Julie Buck. one thing about me is I will not be ignored. Alas, I often was. So I grew up and grew up loud, loud so as to be heard. Shit, no one cared about what I had to say. Not one tiny little fucking word. I push my way through the crowd of open ears and yell, "Can anybody hear me?" Silence. New strategy, talk to them one at a time, for surely a human would dare not ignore me straight to my face. Ha 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 ha. I just opened the door to more disgrace. Yeah, you know what? Fuck you, people. If I'm not worthy of being listened to, neither are you. And I lived my life on the busy, low road and began to get annoyed at idiot, dumb fucks and all those self-righteous fucks who think they're better and wondered why would I want any of this crap crop to hear me. I wanted to eat up all the solitude my apathy could swallow. I didn't care to be heard, nor did I give a shit to hear anybody else, yet there was always an anybody else harshing my mellow with people intrusions of the verbal kind. When I was younger, I didn't mind, but now, whoa, with nary a crescendo and an A-sharp and monotone, I'd utter to them all, "Fucking leave me the fuck alone." End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Oh, can, this kind of hits on the idea of growing up in a house full of kids, and kind of hits on the idea of being the runt of the litter, the one that was always ignored because even though she shouted, there were bigger mouths to be heard and listen to. So she always hits on the idea of being the last one in the pack that anybody bothers with. And even after that, there's not enough crumbs to actually fill the mouth of the want, the need in the moment. And then she walks into, you know what? Fuck you, people. I'm not worthy of being listened to. Neither are you. You come to that point when it's, hey, they don't want to say, fuck you, I don't have to take your shit, you're not paying attention to me, so fuck all of you. And then she had that idea of, I did like that note to, you're harshing my mellow, boy, does that walk back a few years. And, hey, you know what, people, go the fuck away. I don't need to hear your monotone. I don't need to hear you because you don't want to hear me, so bugger off. I hate all of y'all. Get away from me.
I know. It would help if I unmuted myself. I like what you had to say, and I had the same thought about being the youngest in a family. It seems like when you come from a bigger family or middle-sized family and, you know, you're the youngest, you either become one of two extremes. You either become extremely noisy or extremely quiet. And I always enjoy and appreciate Julie's attitude in her writing. She was inspired by the quote, "The odd thing about this life is that you spend half your time trying to get people to listen to you and the rest of the time trying to get them to leave you the fuck alone." And her verbosity within this write definitely fits very well. And I like how she puts the word after yelling, "Can anybody hear me?" the word silence by itself to separate the two parts and then leads into new strategy. Talk to them one at a time, for surely a human would dare not ignore me straight to my face. And, you know, I like how she writes about the idea of how these are really amazing, hard-hitting and edgy lines. She writes about the constant struggle to get attention only to realize that you want to be left alone. And I think a lot of that is our change in mindset, you know, like, you know, well, oftentimes when we are younger, we want to be part of that social clique. And then, you know, as we get older, we get into the mindset that we're just more comfortable with ourselves. So great write and very well done.
Okay. And where shall we go next? And I think Sapphire is going to call in since she asked for the number.
She does have the number, and it's for some reason she has last time she tried to call in too, she had trouble. I don't know why. I think she might have, I don't know if it's her plan or what. She might have to sign up for Skype or something. That would be an idea. All right, and up next we have Space Oddity by If You're Our Abs. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
All right, Space Oddity by If You're Abs. My wife takes off with my neighbor. I pounce like a tiger to the backyard as the warm Savannah breeze caresses my fur. Finding a notebook jam-packed with old poems, my flash drive rewinds. But unless I start bicycling at the speed of light, I can't turn back. So, here I sit, patio chair on power wash tables, whiskey on my left, stationary satchel at one. It's a gauche to celebrate isolation. Patty pops her head out, asking me to hit the gym. I veto the idea as we rode 10 miles earlier and ask about the Tag Heuer watch. She says, I'll tell you later, and splits. I guess my invisible pills are working. I return to my pencil page, graphite dancing on aqua blue lines of a mind trying to reconnect to his Earth mother. I check my phone for the latest horse race at the fairgrounds. Walk back in to refill my glass, and she is still home. I say, I took out chicken breast for dinner. She says, I thought we were going out to dinner. That was two plans ago when we were headed to Gulfstream before we got sidetracked by plans to change the oil from the mango tree and trim the mango tree. Backseated on my jungle throne, I notice that I'm down to my last $4. Those ponies won't listen, but then again, they won't leave me alone either. And ponies.
That was
all
a
right.
Great read. I'm actually going to need you to comment on it, and I'll comment on it as soon as I can.
All right. I like the metaphor of playing this. And that note up front kind of walks a note of, is there something else going on with the, my wife takes off with my neighbor? I pass like a tiger to the backyard as the warm Savannah breeze caresses my fur. There's almost a note of betrayal there, but it turns into that note of I can dine in leisured pleasure in the backyard. Because he's got his notebook jammed with old poems, his flash drive, and got his power, his chair, his whiskey, and maybe a cigar or something. So, all right, I got some free time here. Let me enjoy myself. But then again, she pops her head out, asks me to hit the gym. I veto the idea as it was 10 miles earlier and ask about the Tag Heuer watch. Then there's that little disconnect as the conversation gets sidetracked between a number of things, and they're not completely on the same page in the moment as it rolls down the page. He thought we're going out to dinner. He pulled chicken breast out for dinner. And then two plans to go, sidetracked by changing the oil in the car and trimming the mango tree, and then finish out. Back on his jungle throne, so to speak, the chase lounge in the backyard with his whiskey, enjoying himself, realizing, hey, I ain't got no money. The ponies aren't helping me out. But then again, oh, well. And then that note to they won't leave me alone either. So it's a kind of play on the wife not leaving him alone. The horses won't leave him alone. And he's not winning on either side. And are you back?
Kind of. I'll take time to comment. I apologize. I'm trying to handle something in the background. And, I do enjoy this very much. I've read this before a couple of times, and I always enjoy and appreciate Iff's sense of humor. And I like how he wrote to the same prompt as Julie. And it's interesting and fun to always see how, you know, people take the same prompt in different directions. And, you know, this is like really a great snapshot of his life and how him and his wife, you know, they can spend time together, but they're also very comfortable just having their time separate. And, you know, and I like that. It's really amazing, raw lines, great take on the children prompt, and an excellent write on everyday life. I remember him mentioning his mango tree in another poem he wrote, but that had something to do with his dog eating the mangoes and the really brightly colored poop the dog had. I mean, there probably was more to the poem than that, but that's the part that really stood out. But yeah, I like how within this poem, he reminds us that there's nothing wrong with enjoying time away from family, you know, and away from friends.
Ooh. Zach says she's connected.
What's that?
Zach says she's connected.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Hey, Sapphire, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us. You might have to adjust your headset because we can't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Ah, excellent.
Very cool. Very cool. Awesome. Glad to have you here. How's it going?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Going great.
Wonderful.
Did you get it? Yeah. And did you get a chance to read Iff's poem?
I have not, actually.
Okay, no problem. Well, then we can just go on to the next one. And do you feel comfortable reading, or were you just wanting to, you know, like comment?
I can read. That's not a problem.
Okay.
Excellent.
Awesome. And it would actually help if I grabbed a write to put up.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Well, let me try that. All right. So we have up next The Dark Art of Living by Gilpie. And go ahead, please, Sapphire, and give that a read for us.
Okay, of course. The Dark Art of Living by Gilpie. It's a car wreck off the Jersey Turnpike. Mangled mess, bloody stench of death, bumper-to-bumper traffic. Really, nobody mourns the cat. Craning their necks when they pass, rain-slicked asphalt. Wash the blood windshield wipers whisk and sash. Tisk, tisk, a drunken pass. Devil must be pissing out a bender, 'cause no god could be this cruel. The cops all mutter, Hail Mary, ambulance is for the fools. Never learning their lesson, they'll be drunk before two, telling war stories about living when dying won't do. Another stone to pass, bloody ulcer won't give. Someone's doing laundry. Bathroom stall, Fox hotel room. Please don't tell the missus what she already knows. Late night shift, another grift, crooked cop on the loan. We clean up in the morning when the rooster starts to crow. Kiss our kids with dirty lips. It's another lie we've told. Dark art of living, daily with the dead. Prayer for the sinning and the lives that we have led. And Paul.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you very much. All
right,
you're
welcome.
Oh, I really like this one. I gave this one the gold in the contest. He wrote to the prompt, if I exercise my devil, well, my angels may leave too. Really just edgy and gritty lines. He brings us into a big city scene with the rain-slicked asphalt. But really, this could be any part of America, even small towns. The idea of the guilty people who go out sinning at night, you know, living within that realm of darkness, that realm of sin, and waking up to another sunrise of lies told, and all the way through, it's a powerful rite, but I especially like where it says, devil must be pissing out a bender because no God could be this cruel. The cops all mutter, a Hail Mary ambulance is for the fools. And then near the ending, too, where it says, we clean up in the morning when the rooster starts to crow, kiss our kids with dirty lips is another lie we've told. You know, it's the hypocrisy. And they're probably the exact same people who shine up for church on Sunday, too, and tell lies there. You know, it's the hypocrisy of it all. But, yeah, definitely an amazing rite and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Sapphire, what do you think? You got to read it?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a very powerful piece. Dark, gritty, like Pam said. I have to agree with her. And I personally like Devil Must Be Pissing Out a Bender because no God could be this cruel. The cops all mutter, Hail Mary, ambulance is for the fools. Yeah, just, yeah, it's a great piece. What else can I say?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It kind of hits me up with two songs. Dirty Laundry, that hits on the idea but with the news, but it tells the idea of how dirty laundry gets aired readily and spread quite evenly across everything. And then that note with the, I did like that fancy with the devil must be pissing out of bender. Great line there. I think that God would be this cruel. The cops all mutter and Hail Mary, ambulance is for the fools. And it hits on the idea of death right there in the moment. And it also had me hitting the song we used for the opening of the show, on the streets of the city, only specters don't have pity, the ghosts of those left behind, especially when we get down the back end of this late night shift, another grip, crooked cops on the loan. We clean up in the morning when the rooster starts to crow, kiss our kids with dirty lips, it's another lie we told. Does point with the seedy aspects of humanity in what they're willing to do, get into and play with because they think they can get away with it. But somewhere down the line, something comes up to bite them in the ass and you pay for it on the long end of the stick. So, all right, Sylvie, thank you very much. All right, Pam.
All right, and up next we have Thank You Very Much by Thomas B. And it goes like this. Some people climb a ladder to get higher or at least to appear taller than someone else. This adds to the clutter with the things they mutter about the sins that everyone else is living in. Shake out the rug and clean up the dust. Hope for the best or just follow your lust. The figures are liars and the accountants say it's facts. It's fact. The better you are, the more crap you attract. Write a good story, a tale with romance, drama, victims to rescue and villains to kill. The public will holler and wallow in the dreams you spill. They will call you a hero or damn you to hell by how much they like the story and events you tell. The truth is like that friend you don't like much, but upon whom you can depend. You don't talk to them often, but you know if you need them, you'll use them. Tell them any lie that you can, but they will be there right by your side. Tell you they do it because it is the way they are wired. Spin your stories and confuse the facts. Smile at the people your wonders attract. Turn from stepping into the limo at the end of the show. Look at your followers, and then you know I may be a villain, a sly old fox, but all of you counted in keeping me out of the box. End poem.
Gregory Pam, thank you very much. And Sapphire, what do you think?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to read this again because there's a lot in there that you can dive into and pull apart and, you know, analyze more. But just from the first read, I can honestly say there's so much to pull apart, so much to take from his words. But yeah, what can I really say? I mean, it's just, it's nicely written. And I think it's the type of poem where if you read it again and again, you can get more out of it. At least that's my personal opinion. Yeah, other than that, I'm going to have to go over it a second time, Rex.
All right, cool. Thank you, Sappy.
No problem.
How about you?
Yeah, I have to agree. This is definitely one of those poems that deserves more than one read. Really amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how oftentimes some of his imagery, especially in the end stanza, and his rhyme reminded me of Dr. Seuss. It reminded me of how Dr. Seuss oftentimes, you know, has fun with rhyme, but also oftentimes has a political or social message within his stories and books, you know, and especially when he says at the end, a sly old fox, but all of you counted in keeping me out of the box. It made me think of the book, you know, not only Fox and Socks, but Green Eggs and Ham. You know, would you eat them in a box? Would you eat them with a fox? Yeah, I really thought this was an excellent write that spoke to me on people used as stepping stones on the way to the top. So, excellent write and very well done.
Nice. That could very well be. I like to fight that first stanza. This adds to the clutter with the things they mutter about the sins that everyone else is living in. Shake out the rug and clean up the dust. Hope for the best or just follow your lust. The figures are lies and accountants say it's fact. The better you are, the more crap you attract. The idea of stretching that truth where lies and truth, well, it's like they say, you offer up a lie, it walks its way around the world three times before the truth puts its first pant leg on. So it's that idea of stretching and never apologizing for the prevarications or the outright lies or the misrepresentations that you put out there. You do see it up with romance, drama, victims, villains, and then the public will hollow and wallow in the dreams you spill. They will call you a hero or damn you to hell by how much they like the story and adventure you tell. But the idea of feeding into the narrative of what you think the public wants, and you better be on the right track, otherwise it doesn't work. I mean, it hits on the back end of this. Kirsten's stepping into the limo at the end of the show. Look at your followers, then you know. I may be a villain, a sly old fox, but of all of you counted, keep me out of the box. That idea of, hey, I've been doing this such a long time that no matter which way I turn, I've reached the pinnacle, and there's nothing you can do to keep me from actually not doing this anymore unless my dirty laundry gets exposed. And that's definitely not going to happen. All right, Tom, I like this. Thank you very much.
Very cool, very cool. Well, that was the last write in that contest. Now we're moving on to the new contest. And so what I'm going to have you do, Rex, is because it is our prom poem, and I'll give people a better understanding of, you know, the poet's inspiration, and just because I want to hear it in your voice, I'm going to have you read Eve of St. Agony, or The Middle Class Was Sitting on Its Back by Kenneth Patchen.
All right. The Eve of St. Agony, or The Middle Class Was Sitting on Its Back by Kenneth Patchen. Man dirt and stomachs that the sea unloads, rockets of quick lice crawling inland, planting their damn flags, putting their male things in any hole that will stand still, yapping bloody murder while they slice off each other's heads, spearing themselves around, priesting, whoring, lording it over little guys, messing their pants, writing gush notes to their grandmas, wanting somebody to do something pronto, wanting the good thing right now and the bad stuff for the other boy. Gullet, praise God for the gut with the patented zipper. Sing loud for the lads who sell iceboxes on the burning deck. Dear reader, gentle reader, dainty little reader, this is the way we go round with milk trucks and sea music, Sykes' trap and Meg's rib, the wobbly sparrow with two strikes on the Bible. Behave, Alfred, your pocus is out. I used to collect old ladies, pickling them in brine and painting mustaches on their bellies. Later, I went into strip-teasing before Save Democracy clubs. When the joint was raided, we were all caught with our pants down. But I will say this. I like butter on both sides of my bread, on my sister can rape and hun anytime she's a mind to. Or the Yellow Peril, for that matter. Hector, the poppers in the lobby. The old days were different. The ball scores meant something then. Two pills in the side pocket and two bits said so. He got up slow, see? Shook the water out of his hair. Warm. Tell me that ain't a sweet left hand. I told her what to do, and we did it. Jesus, I said, is your name McCoy? Maybe it was the beer, or because she was only 16, but I got hoarse just thinking about her. Married a John who travels in cotton underwear. Now you would take the day. I don't want it. Wessex, who is that? I saw you. Who is that? Blah, blah, blah. Who is that I saw you, lady? Tony, give all the dough to the church. Lizzie believes in feeding her own face, and that's why you'll never meet a worm who isn't an antichrist, my friend. I mean, when you get down to a brass tack, you'll find some sucker sitting on it. Whereas, Muffles Whip and Jesse's Rod Boyo, it sure looks black in the gut of this particular whale. Hilda, is that a .38 in your handbag? Ghosts and packs like dogs grinning at ghosts, pocketless thieves in a city that never sleeps. Chains clank, waters curse, this world is stark mad. Hey, fatty, don't look now, but that's a revolution breathing down your neck. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. Thank you very much. And that'll give people an idea. That was the prompt poem, and I told people that they could write to any part or the general vibe. And the first poem we have up for that is Awaiting Demise by Betty Page. And Sapphire, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yep, one moment. Okay, here we go. Awaiting Demise by Betty Page. Awaiting Demise. Awaiting demise, writing poetry in bed. Spiders crawl my walls, perched, spinning their webs, sticky, trapping their insects wrapped in full cocoons. Ancient paints peeling, broken doors and broken hearts. Not much matters now, spiraling alone, the aftermath of chaos. I place a call home. Gone in a few days, I gaze at the city streets. Soon that's where I'll roam. Hell's my waiting room. Or is this really heaven? About to reject me. I ignore the pain, watch the cars, they come and go. I can't afford one. Helicopters loom, sirens always going off, yelling every day. Blood curdling screams, coyotes devour their prey. Victorious howls, overwhelming dread, knowing it soon will be me. Frozen on the ground, bloodied on the floor. People walk by me gazing. My hometown's freak show. I've no appetite. Pills, drugs, booze, lost their glamour, living emptiness, hollow, a mere shell, reflect on my former self, suicidal dreams, and poem.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Dan, what you got?
Oh, my gosh. A poem like this really rips my heart out. I mean, I can just, you feel the pain, you know, the depression, what it feels like to be trapped in life being a certain way, a sense of feeling lost. Powerful and emotive lines. As always, Betty is brilliant with her imagery and her metaphors and her 5-7-5 lines. I really like ancient paints peeling, broken doors and broken hearts. Not much matters now. The combination of broken doors and broken hearts, it feels like the broken doors is a metaphor for people who have turned away, who are no longer willing to help. Also, the viscerality of blood-curdling screams, coyotes devour their prey, victorious howls. Again, another great metaphor, the coyotes being a representation of those who destroy and devour other or their people, who make other people their victims. At least that's how it speaks to me. So amazing write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Sapphire, you got to read it. What do you think?
Well, I think for me, the lines, spiraling alone, the aftermath of chaos, I place a call home. I don't know. It almost reminds me of someone being out on the street and all alone and just wanting some semblance of connection. So for me, that's what I got from this piece.
Nice. Thank you very much. The descriptors in this are really nice and clean. They offer up that motif of almost like Bukowski, awaiting demise, writing poetry in bed. Spiders call my walls, broken doors, broken hearts, ancient paints peeling, the aftermath of chaos, a place I call home. What else we got here? I ignore the pain, watch the cars, they come and go. I can't afford one. So everything sits on the scenery itself in the moment and walks that note of depression, loneliness, waiting for the end to come, the idea of understanding whether it's the pills, the drugs, the booze, even though they've lost their glamour within the living emptiness, it's still, when she hits on that, hollow, a mere shell, reflect on my former self, suicidal dreams. So it bites at that idea of the pills, the drug, and the booze, and she hits on that second last stanza, do paint that imagery of wanting to move on from this mortal coil, so to speak. But thank you, Betty. All right, Pam.
All right, up next. We have "This World is Without Veins" by Hat. Only ships of garbage, palms and limbs clinging to women's hips, fat wads of banknotes hidden in pockets, lines of white powder inhaled through the nostrils, shards broken for good luck by newlyweds, dug deep into bare feet. As if banshee scream from throats disturbs a flock of ravens eating a poisoned rat. The wind sits in the silence between the rocks, turning away the ears from our useless talk. The rain washes away all the colors, and the moon draws the blinds so that the sun doesn't shine into the moon's eyes. Rabid, starving dogs bark at coyotes, and the caravan of promises goes on. The white flags lost their meaning 3 days before the end. Cloudy sky vomits blood, and the light from the tunnel's end is stolen. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Sapphire, what do you think?
Wow. Well, first of all, I like the title, This World is Without Veins. That's very creative. It is very visual, this piece. You read it and you can actually visualize her words. It's very powerful. I especially like the wind sits in the silence between the rocks, turning away the ears from our useless talk. The rain washes away all the colors, and the moon draws the blinds so that the sun doesn't shine into the moon's eyes. Yep, very powerful visuals, and very enjoyable. I like it.
Thank you, Sapphire. Sam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, this is absolutely brilliant, gritty and edgy and dark. I like how it speaks on a world filled with violence and hypocrisy, and the idea of the peace talks, the white flags that mean absolutely nothing. I think it speaks on the idea of the upper class trying to think for the make decisions for the common folks or the political powers that be. And, you know, really a wonderful sense of, to me, the death and poison that can be a part of society. And I really like where it says, the rain washes away all the colors and the moon draws the blinds so that the sun doesn't shine into the moon's eyes. People who you want to live in the darkness don't want to see the light. And then the caravan of promises goes on. I like how it basically speaks on empty promises that are nothing more than a sideshow. So amazing write and very well done.
Oh, thank you. I look at this as a three-part note. Those first two stanzas walk a singular path by themselves, only ships of garbage, palms and limbs clinging to women's hips, fat wads of banknotes hidden in pockets, lines of white powder inhaled through the nostril, shards broken for good luck by newlyweds dug deep in the bare feet. Right down to the newlyweds, it's on the idea of the wealthy and what they get into. Wads of banknotes hidden in pockets. I like that note of banknotes. That's not used nearly enough anymore. Palms and limbs cling to women's hips. It hits on the idea of affluence. The shards broken for good luck by newlyweds. That note of a new life beginning. And then that last line dug deep into bare feet isn't for the newlyweds because they're wearing shoes. It's for those who come after them, the cleanup crew, the little people. And then she hits into the little people, as if banshee screams from the throats disturbs a flock of ravens eating a poisoned rat. The wind sits in the silence between the rocks, turning away the ears from our useless talk. The useless talk, in reference to those people who hold the essence of power, or to be the useless talk that we're not allowed to offer up anymore because those elitists don't give a rat's hairy nine quarters about the little people. And then from then on down, it is the rain washes away all the colors, the moon draws the blinds, the essence of we can no longer look to the moon for a little bit of solace. It's painting us in the fact that that sun will not shine for us anymore. And the back end, the cloudy sky vomits blood, and the light from the tunnel's end is stolen. The idea of moving into something else when death comes is just become a void of debilitating angst. It's the idea of waiting and knowing death will come, but you don't know why or where it will come because the big people never tell us anything except put us in the line of fire and offer up as fodder. That which comes. Nicely done there, Hats. Thank you very much.
Well, up next we have Cryonics, Bionics, and Catchphrases by Eric Svensson. And he was nice enough to make a SoundCloud for us. And just to let you know,
Yep, Seth just dropped.
Yep, okay, yep. All right, and here we go.
Cryonics, Bionics, and Catchphrases. Rich royal ketchup red conquers submerged hot dog submarine. Mustard gas yellow mayonnaise seals in. Greasy griddled onion gargoyles plonked on top stand guard. The scream opens its vast mouth to devour. A bourgeoisie vegan bell shudders at such boorishness. Manicured fingers maneuver sushi slivers towards moist ruby lips. Daisy ethereal sighs activate her green light. Scalloped lashes averted toward Perrier waters, bubbly perestroika. Fizzy dizzy reminder to check on her foie gras order from France. So darn damned pricey, since King Charlie banned the delicacy from Buckhouse. Catch a phrase. We'll always have caviar, won't we? Debonair debutant soon became skilled at datant. Catch a phrase, find the cause. No springy, sprightly soapbox will do, though. Paul Simon serenaded her with she wears diamonds on the soles of her feet. Of late, her guru tells her that she is a multi-dimensional being. Your life on Earth is one teeny-weeny part of who you really are. The rest of you lives other lives in parallel universes. Her guru went whiter shades of pale when she screamed at him, well, why the fuck? Where the fuck is? How the fuck do I get to the part of me where there are no wars, genocide, and all this testosterone shit going down? Purdy adventure mind murdered. She body searches his life lean muscles. Now's the time. Now's not the time to tell her she creates her own reality, or that the kingdom of heaven is within, not without. Catch a phrase. Find a cause. Knife edge pause. Breathe deeply, inhale, hold for 7 counts, exhale. Just there and then, she decides to order the latest state-of-art Royal Royce of AI robotic yoga instructors. Enough of vegan mode. I'll up myself to breatharian mode now. As surreal green views of smog-laden Singapore and elsewhere play in Times Square. Which reminds her to book her cryonic spot with Chelsea. Peria bubble suddenly perestroika like mad. She owes me, darlings. she owes me debonair debutant, so skilled at debutant, perfected the fight and flight art of war. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the sound found. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
I like this one. It is very cool. You know, actually, this whole contest was great. It didn't get a huge response, which I wasn't expecting because, you know, it was a longer prompt poem. But we got 13 rights, and really, they're all great quality. But this one is particularly hard-hitting, just clever lines. I think this is the first time I've ever heard Eric drop a couple of F-bombs. So that was very cool and interesting. In fact, I really liked that whole stanza, you know, which starts with, of late her guru tells her that she is a multidimensional being. Your life on earth is one teeny weeny part of who you really are. I like how this speaks on the idea of some, like, rich debutante going around trying to figure out how she – who she is or what she is by trying all the latest crazes, you know, vegan, yoga, you know, whatever it takes to find yourself. And it really, to me, makes a great social commentary on people perhaps looking in too many different directions to find themselves. So-called, you know, find themselves. Great storytelling. I really like a Borges vegan bell shudders at such boorishness. Manicured fingers maneuver, shoes she shivers towards moist ruby lips. Daisy ethereal sighs activate her green light. Very cool. And then the nod to Paul Simon, that was great too. And, Purdy, Avenger, mind molded, she body searches his lithe, lean muscles. Now's not the time to tell her she creates her own reality or that the kingdom of heaven is within, not without. Catch a phrase, find a cause. And those, to me, have the best social commentary of all the, I think, most of the lines, although there's a lot to pick and choose from. In the idea of people trying to find happiness by what they have going on around them or for them, rather than what they can do for other people, you know, rather than, you know, finding, as it says, you know, catch a phrase, find a cause, you know, find that cause, find something that speaks to your heart. But really just awesome lines all the way through and very well done.
Right. Well, this is one of his most loaded pieces. And he's got Yellow Submarine in that first stanza. He's got Paul, mentioned to Paul Simon. But he's also Purdy from the Avengers. That's back in the day. Purdy was the younger version. Once the older one got booted out for a bit too much drinking back in the day. He also hits on Knife Edge, the song we used to open the show. The Royal Royce can hit at the idea of Rolls Royce, but he also hits at Buck something. Well, anyway, Buck House. That's Buckingham Palace, which has 775 rooms in it. So he's playing off a number of thoughts here. The idea that opening one, rich royal, ketchup bleeds out, conquers submerged hot dog submarine, mustard gas, yellow mayonnaise seals in, greasy, griddled onion gargoyles plonked on top, stand guard. The scream opens its vast mouth to devour. The idea of Edward Munch's scream offers up a big voice, the fact that you're looking at what most people can afford in the moment, but then he drops into the next booth, which is a bourgeois vegan bell shudders at such boorishness, manicured fingers, maneuver sushi slivers towards Moist Ruby Lips, Daisy Ethereal Size Activator Green Light, Scallop Lashes, Averted Towards Perrier's Water's Bubbly Perestroika, Pissy Dizzy, you might have checked on her, Foie Gras from France, So Damn Pricey since King Charles, Band the Delicacy from Buckhouse. The idea of how the really rich, the spoiled elite, feed themselves while most people, they got a hit on that hot dog and the onions, the mustard and the mustard mayo and ketchup, because at $1.95, that's all they can afford for lunch, so to speak. Start with the catchphrase and find a cause. Goes right to how these people live themselves. They find a catchphrase, or they offer up a catchphrase which defines them, and then they deliver it into the cause that they want to offer up: global warming, climate change, anything and everything which gets them into feeding the masses with a narrative that they want everybody else to see. Yes, they get to live the high life. And then the idea with the debutante walking into that daytime and learning the art of war, the fight or flight, it's the ease in how they can maneuver themselves into a position where all of a sudden they cause the problem, yet they can get out of it because the papers will cover their asses with stories about, oh, they're being trod upon, they're trying to be canceled, they are such poor people, everybody wants to destroy them. Well, they're the rich elitist quagmire that has their own guards, their own bodyguards filled with carrying guns. Yeah, they're never in danger. But, and that thought to the back end, the cryonics, the idea of thinking they're so good that they should have their essence freeze, ultimately frozen, and then, oh, I can come back to life in another time and live again and do more damage.
I like that. Very cool observations there, Rex. Yeah, he really did put a lot of goodies into this poem. I was thinking that Eric should write for your next rhythm and rhyme show with the Revolver by the Beatles as the prompt songs. I think he would have an interesting time and fun time with some of those songs offered up. But very cool. And up next we have Dear Reader by Peter Solway. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Dear Reader by Peter Solway. Some dainty Dickerson, wishing at least some plot, such ultra-modern verse, gobbled lines of babble all over the wandering shop. Nor moral of needle and camel, drear reader rich with impossible, banker in solitary, an art of runaway incomprehension, bug up wall, hiding under posting. Reader Hayworth with new meaning, a warden to enter, arms crossed, demanding a search, a cockroach loose, cistern to splash. For dear life, dear reader, Emily swimming, waving all thin arms, flood of loud flesh, disgraced banker alone again, wishing he'd been an upstairs poet, gender, grammar bending. Recite from dumbfounded birds, whistle surrealism, like a painted train a-coming, escape up the floor, down the light bulb ceiling, track all of life's movements. Artists to mend cobwebs from carrying cannons on, empty odes to atomic bombs, dictators, uniformed emperors commissioned, saying marvelous darlings, a world not making sense. Dear reader, the first convert to Islam, George and Big Lips to sign off, aim the aircraft at upstairs Amherst, put an end to simple personal verse, canvas of keepers, burning curtains, melted lead plumbing, dally dripping, nonsense without ends, ash of master plan, dollar maids in a can. Dear obedient reader, left to right, rhymes without reason. Local associations, John reminiscing in the face of mountains, Memoirs of Once a Teacher, Life Joined Rooster, Do Not Go Gentle into Oblivion, New Forms of Self-Promotion, Trumpet and Tinsel for a Dying Town, A Wander Down Main, Asian Tourist Lost, Asking After Emily's Place, Three Sisters, Holding Up Money Fingers, Probably COVID Doctors After Promotions, Still with White Mask On, Lost Poetess in Fancy Frames, Widow of Tennyson, Joan of Arc, Crystal Sunset, Orange and Black, Bones Without Reception, Outside Nietzsche's Bar and Grill, Closed for the Lockdown Season, Last of the Unread Revolutionists, Parochial Artist, Son John and David, To Sketch Her Departure in Flames, Penmanship Swift as Delacroix, German Backpacker Sleeter, Above Land's Edge, Hightown of Demise, Direct Brainwashed Fools to the Drop, Don't Jump, Obey Signs on Fence, Emily and All the Skinny Saints to Chant, Please Make Much Sense, and Poem. All right. This one's packed a bit, too.
All right. Great read there, Rex. Oh, my gosh. Before I comment on this poem, I have to tell you, you missed the funniest line on Peter's poem on and Break On Through. Faisy and I were just cracking up laughing. He had this poem, and this one line he had in there was, great mammaries a-bouncing. And I made the comment that it sounded like something that Robin would say to Batman. And I was like, great memories of bouncing, Batman. And Casey and I were just cracking up. I don't know.
That should, that should be the other way around. Holy memories bouncing, Batman.
Yeah, exactly, like that.
Yeah, that is kind of apt because both him and both Robin and Batman were quite the floozies back in the day. They were doing 3, 4, 5, 6 women a day because they all wanted a little bit behind the mask.
That might have been where he got that idea from. It just cracked me up. Faisy said she's going to make a meme out of it. But now this poem is great. I like how his title is an inspiration and from the part in the poem that says, dear reader, dear, gentle reader. Right away, brilliant imagery, clever lines. I like the phrase Dainty Dickerson, which sounds like some Victorian era insult, nor moral of needle and camel, dear reader, rich with the impossible banker and solitary, an art of runaway incomprehension, bug up wall hiding under poster. I don't know. To me, that first part speaks on the idea of, we live in a world where people's moral compasses are so out of whack. And the idea that, I'm trying to think how to word it. I'll skip that. And this, for dear life, dear reader, Emily swimming, waving all thin arms, flood of loud flush, disgraced banker alone again, wishing he'd been an upstairs poet, gender, grammar bending. Those wishes of who or, be whatever or be whoever you want to be. I like how he brings in Emily Dickinson and the idea of how she spent so much of her life alone. I think that makes for a great metaphor for somebody who wants to stay away from, the social commentary. And he brings in Facebook, which is another thing that to hide away from. Local associations, John reminiscing in the Facebook mountains, memoirs of once a teacher, life drawn rooster, do not go gentle into oblivion, new forms of self-promotion, trumpet and tinsel for a dying town, a wander down Main, Asian tourists lost, asking after a meal place. Just really clever lines, taking, you know, a look at how easy it is to lose any individuality on the main street of social media. And I will say that I like the three sisters and how, to me, they represent perhaps the three sisters of fate. I know there's the three sisters referring to the crops of corn, beans, and squash within Native Americans legends. But I kind of get the impression of the idea of the three sisters of you know, the three fates. Really excellent lines and just very well done. And sorry, I almost said your thoughts, Rex. Like, duh,
this
I don't need to say that.
Yeah, this thing is packed. You got Dickinson up top. You got the Tower of Babel, the idea of tearing down that tower and sending the voices of man from a singularity into a world of disparate voices that do not understand each other. And then the second, third, fourth stanzas, even down to the fifth, all walk under a singularity. Those stanzas walk into the Shawshank Redemption. Banker in solitary, an art of runaway incomprehension, bug up wall, hiding under poster, Rita Hayworth with new meaning, but warden to enter, arms crossed, demanding a search, a copper, a loose cistern to splash. And then, for dear life, dear reader, Emily swimming, waving off thin arms, flood of loud flush, disgraced banker alone again, wishing he'd been an upstairs poet, gender, grammar, bending, all that. That last line rolls into what's going on now. And then the next one hit into dumbfounded birds, whistle surrealism, like a painted train, a coming. Escape up the floor, down the light bulb ceiling, track all of life's noise. That hits on, that has me thinking of Alcatraz, Birdman of Alcatraz, plus the three men who actually did escape from Alcatraz. And then roll into the atomic bombs, dictators saying marvelous things, a world not making sense. The advent of communism, then he walks into the advent of conversion to Islam, the idea of Islam walking across the earth. If you do not convert, you die, so to speak. Let me see what else we got. Dally dripping, nonsense without ends, ash of master plan, dollar maids in a can, dear obedient reader, left to right, rhymes without reason. Nice. I like that line. I do like the face fart thought with the Facebook mountains. The Three Sisters does hit on the idea of fate. And then he drops in COVID doctors after promotions, still with my masks on, whilst poetess and fancy flames, widow of Tennyson, Joan of Arc, cliffs of sunset, orange and black, phones without reception. The idea of what's going to be coming next. Walk in the idea of Nietzsche again, the Ubermann, the rise, so to speak. And then we've got Land's End, High Town of Demise, direct brainwash fools to the drop. Don't jump, obey signs on fence. Emily and all the skinny saints to chant, please make much sense. The idea is that would be the back end of life. People asking, please make sense. But the brainwash fools, yeah, lemmings. You got to open up your mind and start looking at things a bit differently and question. Nicely done, Peter.
Absolutely. Very cool comment. All right. Up next, we have Middle in Class by S. Sharp. And he was nice enough to make a recording of this. So here we go.
Middle in Class. sidestepping saturated mildew over watered lawns, toiling, creating polished stone. Molly coddles erect statues. Signs point where we point to the point, pointing simple light, and arches collide with types so typical and benign. Even Tommy, who lives life in fear of woodpeckers, gets no rise. Sprung and spurting, New Year's all the time. Cork popping, poking out an eye. Breast unleashed, cane, crutch in a clutch, swings side to side. Black gap and Jimmy smile, crawling on the floor, looking for a contact lens. Hands on the clock, never go there. Mama says, no hand touches Uranus and nobody's seen Pluto. You hear what I'm saying? Mama, digital clocks don't have no hands. Damn clock, damn floppy disk on an abandoned shelf. AI examines itself for crabs or fetishes. Self-mutilating moment of actual intelligence. Mary carried hollering a six-pack by the fanny pack. Dear poets, yes, poets, late night poets, strike a line, a stanza, through left-handed whiskey shop takers. Showing off ambidextrous tongue, Cindy drinks and talks, ventriloquist or wooden dummy routine, toothpicks fly, inhibition scatter, Todd and his toad sprocket spins, body parts swell from excitement or age. I step out of the way, I'm no politician, the sun does not set between dawn's legs. Although I did wake up at the crack of dawn once, we were both surprised. A drunken night, Sunday breakfast of sperm and eggs, with a sight of sausage displayed. Window open, curtain blowing in the breeze. Weekend over, hangover, now midday. Monday, Monday, on the way.
Great read, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, ma'am.
Yeah, this was really cool. I love the way he picked up on the energy of the prompt poem. Clever imagery and metaphors really worked well. Mention of Todd and his Toad Sprocket spins makes me think of the band Toad the Wet Sprocket. I haven't listened to them in a very long time. I should check out their music again. But love the use of the word mollycoddles. Mollycoddles erect statues, signs point where we point to the point. Pointing's impolite and arches collide with types so typical and benign. Even Tommy, who lives life in fear of woodpeckers, gets no rise. Sprung and spurting New Year's all the time. Cork popping, poking out an eye. I really think that is so very clever and awesome. The way it speaks on, you know, everybody just basically pointing to everybody else's flaws, the idea of everything just going limp. I mean, you know, his word choice is great in this. Let's see, what else? I mean, there's just so much great lines all the way through. AI examines itself for crabs or fetishes, self-mutilating moment of actual intellectual. Mary carried hollering a six-pack by the fanny pack. Dear poets, yes, poets, late-night poets. How very cool and clever that he put in a nod to late-night poets. Todd and his toad sprocket spins, body parts swell from excitement or age. I step out of the way, I'm no politician. The sun does not set between dawn's legs. I like the idea of how this speaks on to me, sexual indulgences and, you know, under the table hand jobs between the politically elite and the idea of, you know what, I'm just stepping out of the way of all of this. There's just too much going on for me to try to deal with anything other than being an ordinary Monday. Brilliant lines and very well done.
Nice, Pam. This reminds me of that movie that came out 2 years ago, Babylon, that sort of late 1920s Hollywood, and how they were so indulgent when it came when it comes to their parties, because this was a full-on display of that note, even coming down to the mass orgies, bringing in an elephant just for the fact that you got a really big house and you want to have an elephant because you're putting on a show and everything that goes on with it. I do like that note too. Molly, he's offering up that note. Molly itself as a person coddles erect statues. A science point where we point to the point, pointings and polite and arches collide with types so typical and benign. Even Tommy, who lives life in fear of woodpeckers, gets no rise. The sexual innuendo in this is dazzling. What else have we got in here? Where was that one? Shit. Oh, Mama says, no hand touches Uranus and nobody's seen Pluto. You hear what I'm saying? Nice play there. The six-pack by the fanny pack, that does offer up the note of rear entry, kind of. Bada-boom, bada-bing. And ambidextrous tongue, the painted note to bisexuality. Inhibition scatter, tautness, toad, spark, it spins, body parts swell from excitement or age. That kind of hits at the boat. I step out of the way, I'm no politician. The sun does not set between dawn's legs, although I did wake up at the crack of dawn once. Dawn being capitalized on both ends, so we're not actually hitting at the idea of dawn itself. We're looking at a person named Dawn. Sunday breakfast of sperm and eggs with a side of sausage displayed, window open, curtain blowing in the breeze, weekend over, hangover, now midday, Monday on the way. It's sort of a Friday, Saturday night, all-end binge, and the note to waking up Sunday afternoon to indulge a little bit more and realize, oh, shit, Monday's coming. Got to get back to work. All right, nicely done, Scott.
All right. Up next, we have The Blood Vessels Between Sense and Nonsense by Postwoman. On certain days, some flowers are not fragile. They are inebriated and alive only on acid rain. But what about the drought that was unanticipated, the famine when flowers eat flaws of the soil and the soil cannibalizes its own fault lines? You're looking tall because of your shoes. I am a mountain barefooted. We are textbooks with where wary souls withdraw into diagrams and charts and chapters and charters. All castles are crumbling by midday, and by midnight, all is ash and ashen, elegy and elegant, elegiac, elegant and inelegance. Wandering through the heroic couplets of the ghost of hermits who were witty but quiet, full of light when light was a legitimate citizen of the earth, and apparitions of panthers devoured darkness like stout city mice, and the whole shadow opera became the supra-conscious of the precursor of letter writers. You won't believe me, but a lot of gaps in a single river were the graffiti of ghosts, prologues to other dimensional emojis, the original smiles of book covers before binding their backs, the cipher of spines from when the printing press made noise and then didn't. From when the allegory of the insane was a rhyme gazette of real reiteration, and a sudden city merchant would be doomed to desire the full moon on the moor because he saw the real ribs of words, their destitute liver and lungs, lingering along the hanging branches of what rhymes with rhyme and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Where was this? We are textbooks where weary souls would draw into diagrams and charts and chapters and charters. All castles are crumbling by midday, and by midnight all is ash and ash. And, you know, the rise and fall, but that note to diagrams, charts, chapters, and charters. Being textbook weary souls, we end up where we become part of history. Elegy in Lijak, elegant in inelegance, wandering through the heroic couples of the ghost of hermits who were witty but quiet, full of light when light was a legitimate citizen of the world. Sitting on the idea of darkness as overtaken things to the point where darkness is on full display. Do not notice. And we got this. What else we got? The original smiles of book covers before binding their backs, the cipher of spines from when the printing press made noise and then didn't. The idea that all of a sudden books have become the note of what once was, but not is now, because you open up that note to the books being on our screens now, and instead of what we should be handling in the moment and then reading. It's getting to the point where everything is being changed, and it doesn't offer up that note of actually knowing, understanding, feeling, and holding that within your hands, because it's becoming ethereal and just like life is.
Oh, absolutely. Great observations there, Rep. Yeah, this has such brilliant imagery and metaphors. And I do like where it speaks, how it speaks on the idea of how not only books, but language in general used to mean so much more. You know, there's too much, you know, slang. There's too much shortening of language, TY instead of thank you, YW instead of you're welcome. There's just not the same appreciation, not only for the solid reality and the sturdiness and the beauty of books, but in general for the just a brilliant way that language can be used if only we allow ourselves to use it. I really like this all the way through, but I especially like all castles are crumbling by midday, and by midnight all ash is ashen. I feel like that speaks on the idea of losing our imaginations, and prologues to other dimensional emojis, the original smiles of book covers before binding their backs, the cipher of spines from when the printing press made noise and then didn't. You know, I have to admit, I do read both. Like, I like to collect, and I have books to read, and I have book form for some of my favorites, but sometimes if I just want to read something like, you know, once or so, I'll download it from, you know, Amazon or something like that. And so there's definitely benefits to both, but I really appreciate how this speaks on having a love for language. And I like this all the way through, but another part that really speaks to me is and a sudden city merchant would be doomed to desire the full moon on the moor because he saw the real ribs of words, their destitute liver and lungs lingering along the hanging branches of what rhymes with rhyme. You know, the hanging branches of what rhymes with rhyme, that's clever because, you know, it's like looking at how people are too obsessed over the technical rather than looking at the true essence of what language and poetry should be. So amazing right and very well done.
Nice. All right. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have Every Time I'm Drinking by Paul D. Fisher, PhD. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Every Time I'm Drinking by Paul D. Fisher, PhD. I ain't no longer drinking much, but it's something I really knew. A whale would go to a distillery. I would drink him down to the deepest blue. But no matter how long I'm off the bottle, there's just some something that you do. Now every time I'm drinking, I'm looking at you. I used to drink Canadian Mist when a Toronto girl gave me the blues. I had my lion's share of cognac over a French coquette or two. But now I'm back in Nashville. Dickel and Daniels are on my crew. And every time I'm drinking, I'm looking at you. It's so easy to get to Petorkaville each time we restart something new. Now every time I'm drinking, I'm looking. Every time I'm drinking, yes. Every time I'm looking, every time I'm looking at you. Ba-da-ba-bump. And boom. All right.
Great read, Rex. I like the ba-da-da-bump at the end. It's like somebody like banging on the drums after they like, you know, told a joke or, you know, something like that. But clever line, great sense of humor, very entertaining, right? I think that one of the parts that really stood out to me, a couple of the parts is, first of all, this, I used to drink Canadian Mist when a Toronto girl gave me the blues. I had my lion's share of cognac over a French coquette or two. And it's so easy to get to Palookaville each time we restart something new. Now, every time I'm drinking, I'm looking. Yeah, every time I'm drinking, yes, every time. And I like how he goes into this kind of blathering at the end, almost like you could just see him getting drunker and drunker as he's writing the poem. So very cool and very well done.
Well, that end gives me a thought to how some things used to finish with cartoons or a show. Da 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 da. But in this case, it is the finale. It walks that same line, but the da 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 bump is the idea of actually falling off his stool. So. The idea, he's walking here from the whale, drinking down the deepest blue, the Canadian Mist, the Toronto girl, the cognac and the French coquette or two. And now he's back in Nashville and Dickel and Daniels are on my crew. And every time I'm drinking, I'm looking at you. The idea of sitting at the bar on a stool, what he's drinking, not so much the bottle itself, it's that big mirror that sits behind the bar. He's drinking alone and he's looking at himself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like that. Yeah, I didn't think about that falling off the stool. That's funny. All right. And up next we have And Her Piss Runs Down the Corporate Ladder by Naomi Sarah. Bleeding twice more sweat for twice less opportunities. Her piss runs down the corporate ladder, puddling on the rungs you misogynists slip on, all while trying to stare up her skirt. But her legs are jammed shut for you, little boy. She is more educated, higher up on the career scale. And how you cringe when I say higher paid. She will dry roast and blanch your nuts, squash and squeeze them into recyclable glass jars, spreading them across her toast as non-GMO peanut butter as you stuffy old-fashioned Puritan witch hunters, vessels of thousands of years of patriarchal oppression, pass your anti-abortion laws, trying to keep her pregnant and barefoot in the kitchen. Watch as she soars right past you. Wipe your snotty, spiteful noses on the toilet paper, stuck to her shiny black heels as she marches on out, spinning the world on its axis, turning it upside down, right. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. I like this. It's blatantly feminist, and it's funny considering what's coming out now and the hate from the other side. All those women who run that angle did that. All of a sudden, they're whining, bitching, and moaning because they can't find no men. They can't have kids because they waited too long, or they're searching because the biological clock is running out and nobody wants her. Why? Her piss is running down that corporate ladder onto everybody she stepped over on the way up that corporate ladder. So, you know, it works both ends. Both ends to the middle. You can have it all of what you want. But you know what? The back end of things is it's the priority you place on things. You spent so many years with the feminist angle. You can do this. You can do. There are plenty of things women can do. Yes, and there are plenty they can't based on physiology. So that idea of total equality doesn't stand on its own. And you got all these women complaining about, yeah, they said we could have it all, and they're finding out they can't have it all. So I find this rant funny on that level. What about you?
Yeah, I love how strong her imagery and language is in this. You know, and it's really some great hard-hitting lines. I really like she will dry roast and blanch your nuts, squash and squeeze them into recyclable glass jars, spreading them across her toast as non-GMO peanut butter. You know, those were great lines there, and stuck to her. Wipe your snotty, spiteful noses on the toilet paper stuck to her shiny black heels as she marches on out. Definitely powerful lines with a strong voice within, and very well done.
All right. What's up next?
Up next, we have Americana 1776 by Guilty. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Americana 1776 by Guilty. Pursuing your dreams means stepping. Let's see if I can see this in a second. Pursuing your dreams means stepping your size 13 shoes, holes and all, on the back of some other slob who doesn't like the same bluegrass as your front lawn, jockey with exaggerated red sweet lip, red some teeth. I don't like this lab.
Are you okay, Rex?
No, it's the text. I have trouble reading it because of the way it is. Yeah.
Well, can't you all? Can you make put it into dark mode? Like right next to your name, there should be. Okay. Well, I'll just put it into dark mode and I'll give it a read. Maybe.
Dark mode?
Let me check. If that helps. No, that doesn't help either. That just. Okay. I thought maybe that would help. Because there's like three lines to next to your name, or there should be at least. I don't know how it works on the phone. But you click on those, and it has the option of dark mode. And I thought that dark mode is the letters, but it doesn't. So click it a second time. There you go. You know what? Do you see where it says dark mode?
Nope.
Okay. Okay, well, That's fine. I'll go ahead and give this a read, but here we go. Americana, 1776. And it goes like this. Pursuing your dreams means stepping your size 13 shoes, holes and all, on the back of some other slob who doesn't like the same bluegrass as your front lawn jockey with exaggerated red sombre lips. It was a gift from Uncle Tom, traveling salesman selling toilet brushes with the law. It's a moonshine. Ain't that still free? We revolted against the Brits, pouring good tea into Boston, harboring no regrets. What's some blood on the shirts? Skin in the game, a little piece off of the Plymouth Rock. Every man should have some dirt, a cock and a hen to work laying eggs. Crack them shells on the skulls, you'll have to bebop. You'll join the militia, the clans, birch societies. I mean, what is the measure of a man other than the liberties he keeps and the freedoms he denies his brother? End poem.
Great read, Ann. Thank you very much. Well, this does, it does walk on a touch of history, but it also bites at the notion of what did it all mean to begin with? Well, you can't go somewhere forward without actually being in the past to begin with. And the idea was born in this moment, and they did put all people in the Constitution itself. It took a little time getting there, but yes, it did get there. And at the time, this was something that wasn't just here. This was plastered all over the world from the East, the Mideast, to the Far East, to the Southern Shores down in South America, across England, Australia, Canada, everywhere. This wasn't a singular notion just to America itself, although everybody seems to want to paint it that way, which is kind of a look back on itself, denying what else was being done in the meantime. But it does hit on the idea that some things are hard to get rid of, and the stench of that stain lingers long after and is used as a note to keep beating people over the head of that which once was but now is no longer. Yet nobody really wants to take a look at the idea that slavery is still done today across the world. There's plenty of white slavery. There's plenty of slavery on many levels walking everywhere, from with the idea of pushing people to sexual slavery to everything else, which is even more demonic than what went on back then. Because today it's a $1 trillion business that stamps its ugliness across each and every nation upon the earth, whereas back then it was a tide of life. It was what people did to each other. I mean, you look at where the word slavery came from. It came from the African countries sailing into Eastern Europe, Slovakia, Russia, and Ukraine, and those countries. That's where the name slave comes from, Slovakia. And a lot of people don't know history. They should actually stop believing the people babbling and actually do a little research. You'll find out a whole lot more of what reality was back then as opposed to what it is now.
I like that. Great observations there, Rex. Really informative. This is just powerful lines, amazing imagery and metaphors. I look back at how, as a society throughout history, we've used each other one way or another, to get our individual liberties, not realizing that in our individual liberties, there's the denial of other people's liberties. I really like his wordplay in this, especially within the lines. the Brits pouring good tea into Boston, harboring no regrets. What's some blood on the shirt, skin in the game, a little piece of the Plymouth Rock? You know, just amazing lines on how, you know, everybody wants their piece of the rock, you know, but, I really, like you said, it delves into history, but it also delves into social commentary. Excellent write and very well done.
And they also forget why that started to begin with. It wasn't so much with the Boston Tea Party, although that was a note to, that was 1775, I think it was. It was a note to, it went against the taxes. You had the stamp tax going back then, tax on everything going in, and people saw the rise in price and what it was taking out of them, because everything went back tax-wise to London. But the real start to the war itself was the fact that after that, the Brits came in and demanded guns be taken from the people. And that's what they used for protection. That's what they used for hunting. And without that, they wouldn't have the note to actually feeding their families. And that was the reason the war itself kicked off. No, we will not be trod upon anymore. This is our livelihood. Yep. This is our lands. This is our homes. This is what we protect ourselves. This is how we feed ourselves. You will not take that from us. And that's where the angle of the war started, with a note to taking away that which protects the people.
Yeah, and, you know, the irony of it is, you know, we fought the British, you know, not only to be our own country, but to keep, as you said, our rights to bear arms. And now oftentimes we're fighting our own government for that same right. You know, it's...
They keep failing. Everything they throw out is being struck down as unconstitutional, and it keeps going on. Just like, well, they're playing lawfare, because they know that the Supreme Court only sits in session. So that they play with this angle of, well, we'll put it out there, and then they shut it down. Well, we'll do another one, and then they'll get, then know it's going to take a little bit of time before it gets there. Might be 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, a year before it comes around again. And in the meantime, they play on that voice of taking that which is not theirs to take. But the idea of them wanting to take the guns is because when we lose the next war that comes about, they want us unable to defend ourselves. Thereby, when we lose that war, we get to be taken over by what country defeats us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Amen to that. But I have to say, this has been a great show tonight, Rex. And I did want to mention that we will have, I believe, 4 carryovers. Yes, it'll be Grant G., Ed Hunter, Durrani, and Julie Buck will be the 4 carryovers for next week.
Okay. Great show, Pam. Thank you, Sapphire, for sitting in with us for a little while. And Hats and Rosie for the boards. Thank you very much. And we'll do this again next Tuesday morning. Good night, folks.